And you've got the split primary in South Carolina, Republicans this weekend, Democrats next. But this Saturday in Nevada, both parties put their chips on the table for caucus day. We've got our reporters' roundtable to give us more. Beth Fooey of the Associated Press covers presidential politics, and she is in Nevada now. Marcus Mabry is international business editor for the New York Times, and Clarence Page is a columnist for the Chicago Tribune. Hi, guys.
Hi.
Hey. Hey, Brian.
So, Beth, you are just on a tear. You covered Hillary Clinton's visit to Compton, California this week. Now you're in a totally different state. Set the scene for us in Nevada. What's the vibe?
Well, it's really interesting, Farai. It's a caucus state like Iowa, but unlike Iowa, where the caucuses have been part of the fabric of political tradition for quite some time, the whole emphasis on Nevada's caucuses is very new to voters here, and a lot of them still don't really know what's going on. So it's really been a challenge for these candidates to get their teams on the ground to identify their voters and get them out to vote. It's the typical challenges that caucuses always provide, but it's especially tough here because you're dealing with, as I said, a population that's not particularly used to it, a very demographically diverse population with a lot of Hispanic voters. So they're definitely facing a lot more obstacles to getting this pulled off than they ever did in Iowa. On the other hand, it gives both candidates, both Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton, a pretty good opportunity here because it is so new, and they're relying on different types of support. Clinton's got a lot of support from the Democratic establishment here. Her campaign is being run by Harry Reid's son, the Senate Majority Leader's son, Rory Reid, while Obama's got the endorsement of a very powerful union in Las Vegas, the culinary workers, who are actively organizing for him. So I don't think anybody knows what's going to happen, honestly. It's very, very much up in the air. Even John Edwards is still a player here, so we will know in about 24 hours what's going to happen.
Marcus, where do you think the reporting pack is going to go next? I don't mean literally state to state. I mean issue to issue. This week was all race all the time. Where do you see the conversation going next?
Well, you know, Farai, the amazing thing about this race to me is that anything we think we know, anything we predict as the next thing to happen in this race, turns out to be wrong. So there is no way that I'm going to take a guess on what issue they go to next. So far, what we've seen as far as the issues coverage, and I think, unfortunately, I think in this election, like in almost every election, sadly, in our country so far, we have not actually done a good job of covering the issues. And so what we see is the issue became race after there was, you know, a slip-up on the part of Hillary Clinton, supposedly, and on the part of former President Clinton. That's when it became an issue. Not because we were talking about policy prescriptions or about visions of America's future. It happened because there was a gaffe on the campaign trail. And that is just such horrible, you know, superficial coverage, unfortunately, and that's what we're seeing again. So I can't tell you what the next issue will be. But I think it is going to be hilarious, actually, literally, though. You said this wasn't the question, but to see where does the reporting pack go next, geographically. I think it's going to be fascinating to see. Obviously, they'll converge in South Carolina, but after that, you know, when we head towards Super Duper Tuesday, where is everyone going to be? And it's not just us, but it's the same thing with the candidates. This is the wackiest presidential campaign we've ever seen.
So you're saying that you think that basically personality politics are winning out over substantive politics in reporting?
And I guess some people might say, well, oh, there's a surprise. But yeah, I think it's true. And I think it's sad because I think every year we hope it'll be different. But every year it's the same.
This is News and Notes. I'm Farai Chidea. If you're just joining us, we've been talking politics and more on our Reporters' Roundtable. We've got Marcus Mabry, international business editor for the New York Times, Clarence Page, columnist for the Chicago Tribune, and Beth Fooey, who covers presidential politics for the Associated Press. So welcome back, guys. Clarence, I'm going to go straight to you. When you've had people walk up to you on the street and ask about this race, you wrote a column about one of those examples. What are people asking you?
Oh, what are people? that column was about a refresh my memory for I could, as a columnist, I never remember what I've said, but I believe that columnist was asking me that person was asking me about Barack, right?
Yeah, why Obama lost New Hampshire.
That was it, right? Okay, that was the question, and she wanted the thing that struck me was she said just a one-word answer, because she was in a hurry, like everybody is. I said, there's no way to answer that in one word, and that's why I write columns. But It was my own answer to the question as to why I lost. In short, was the female factor. Marcus is right. We journalists have had a heck of a time making predictions, especially New Hampshire seemed to be way off. Everybody's speculating, but the best information I've been able to receive is that the polls were right on Barack Obama's turnout, but did anticipate a larger than expected turnout among independent women, in particular for Hillary Clinton.
All right,
so, but that was last week's narrative, as you mentioned, and now we wait to see what the next narrative is going to be.
I actually want to turn to the economy. You cannot say it's the economy, stupid, enough in an election year or in a year when America's future seems to rest on a knife's edge. And yesterday, the Federal Reserve Chairman Ben Bernanke took the mic here. He did a little bit talking about how the economy needs a boost. Here's a bit of his statement before the House Budget Committee.
Fiscal measures that involve long lead times or result in additional economic activity only over a protracted period, whatever their intrinsic merits might be, will not provide stimulus when it is most needed.
Now, that was kind of dense language, Marcus, but basically, does the Fed chair have a plan? And if so, what is it?
Well, you know, I think if we watch what Wall Street has done, as far as the close yesterday, down some 300 points, the close the day before that, the long-term trend we've seen, the worst beginning of a year we've seen in decades, I think the stock market speaks as far as its faith in the Fed chair. Unfortunately for Chairman Bernanke, there's no faith that he has a plan. And, you know, even in his testimony, he said, we really have to do something. I'm not going to tell you what we should do, but we really have to do something to ease what's going to be, you know, what looks like we're headed for a recession. We need to do something to ease all this for, especially those loan holders who are in trouble. And that number is going to increase throughout our country. And the fear, of course, is that the problems in the housing market and the subprime bad loans that were sent out and that lots of banks, huge banks like Citigroup hold, and billions of dollars of loans that they've made that they're going to have to write off because they will never be repaid because they were bad loans. That all those problems are seeping out into the rest of the economy now. So Americans are pulling back, and finally, the American consumer, who always spent no matter what happened, and that's how we kept this economy going, is stopping all that spending. And that's the fear. No one, the administration doesn't have a plan. The Fed chairman certainly doesn't have a plan. And I feel for the guy because Wall Street really hates him right now. And every time we see the stock market down hundreds of points, that's Wall Street saying, we think this guy's a boob. Unfortunately, I think there's going to be a lot of pain in this presidential year, and I think that's going to be incredibly bad for the Republicans. But also, it's going to be a challenge for the Democrats because the Republicans will get to say what the American people need now are for the president, President Bush's tax cuts to be made permanent. We can't increase the taxes on Americans, and just by letting those tax cut the tax breaks that Bush gave, largely it's true to the very well off. Just by letting those expire, which they would do if Congress does nothing, the Republicans will paint that as the Democrats raising taxes on Americans. And the Republican candidates will say, you cannot raise taxes on Americans when we're in the middle of a recession or headed toward a recession where the American people are going to be hurting already economically. You can't increase their taxes.
Now, Beth, the president just today called for $145 billion worth of tax relief. When you go out on the trail, do people have their own plans? And what I mean by that is not the politicians, but the citizens. As you go around doing your reporting, do people ever say, well, if I was president, blank, or how are people processing this?
Oh, they do. And of course, I'm covering Senator Clinton, so we speak to entirely Democratic audiences for the most part, and their concerns are very much about the economic bad economic picture that we're facing right now. Everybody's very, very concerned about health care. Everybody's very concerned about whether their jobs are secure. The economy has become absolutely the focus on the campaign trail in the last, I'd say, at least the last month, certainly in the last couple of weeks. Senator Clinton's talking about virtually nothing else. She's got a stimulus plan that she's promoting. She criticized President Bush just a few minutes ago here in Las Vegas. She said the plan that he unveiled this morning wasn't adequate, that it left out 50 million people. Obama also has an economic stimulus plan that he's discussing, as does Senator Edwards. They're acutely aware that this is what voters are concerned about right now. It's a very different environment than it was a year ago when they all first just started running when the Iraq War was really the issue that everybody wanted to talk about, certainly in Democratic audiences. And they spent, you know, large portions of their question and answer time responding to concerns people had about the war. Those have largely gone away, which is not to say that people aren't concerned about the war anymore, but it doesn't seem to be the front burner that it once was. People are really concerned about their jobs. They're concerned about health care. They're concerned about how they're going to pay for their kids' college. You can just tell that people feel very, very vulnerable to the vagaries of our economic situation at the moment.
Clarence, it's also a time of mergers. There was the takeover bid of Countrywide by Bank of America. Now the New York Stock Exchange saying it's going to buy the American Stock Exchange. They've been rivals. Is that also a sign that America is shifting permanently, not just politically but economically?
Yeah, it is. It certainly shows that the economic terrain is shifting depending on the investments that these large corporations made, large financial companies made in recent years. Everything we've read or heard about, or in many cases experienced with the subprime mortgage meltdown, has made formerly strong companies quite vulnerable to takeovers. And that's indicative of, I think, a rising issue here in the campaign. If you'd asked me the question you asked Marcus about what the next issue is going to be, I would say, you know, I can't predict, but we certainly see the economy rising, which should help John Edwards, you would think, since he's made a bigger issue out of his populist pitch than anybody. But he hasn't connected in a way that has risen above the emotional impact of race and gender. Now, with all three candidates coming out with their own plans, I'm waiting to see them relate that to ordinary people. Like, if you've lost your job and you can find another one in another state that's looking for your talent, will you be able to sell your house if it is worth less than what you paid for it?
Well, Clarence, we're going to have to wrap it up there. Marcus and Beth, thank you as well.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, Brian.
We have been speaking with Clarence Page, columnist for the Chicago Tribune, Marcus Mabry, international business editor for the New York Times, and Beth Fooey, Associated Press.